Thank you, everyone here in the assembly. Thank you to Firefunk for the invitation to speak. Thank you to Andy, actually, as well, for setting this whole thing up. So this talk is part one, three parts. My name is Gary. Udit will be speaking. Ben will also be coming up. And we are a small fraction of a group called Toronto Mesh. And this title for a talk is called DIY Networks in Toronto. This was delivered about a year ago at another conference called Radical Networks in New York. And this talk is more or less a concatenation and a really condensed version of that talk, in which we talk about Toronto, which is where we are coming from, and North America, which is the continent that we call home. So Toronto is a place of a lot of different things. I think one of the main landmarks that has really been kind of cemented in people's minds is the CN Tower. And in many ways, CN Tower is a landmark of the city, but it's also a really important piece of infrastructure that has made itself known as sort of the defining thing that, Toronto is known for. In some ways, it's a really interesting piece of infrastructure because it's built for communication. It was originally the site of a major train hub, and at a point in the city's history, line of sight was incredibly important for buildings and for businesses to operate. In the CN Tower, there are many different wireless technologies that are kind of rooted in this structure specifically. But we're not going to be talking about the CN Tower. It's there. Visit it when you have the chance to come to Toronto. But know that it is an important piece of infrastructure that has been the cemented thing that we are kind of talking around when we come to talking about networks in Toronto, specifically DIY ones that we have interacted with. We also recognize that Toronto is has many layers of infrastructure. This is a photo of a conduit being installed in along a major artery of the city many years ago. But the thing to take away from this is to know that Toronto is a layered city of many different pieces of conduit, wireless signals, people, roads, sidewalks. Anything in that spectrum of things that make up a city are baked into Toronto. Mind you, it probably less of a historical kind of backstory compared to places in Europe, but still is something that we kind of think about. And this is kind of rooted in why we are talking about ecologies and history of Toronto networks, knowing that these pieces of infrastructure has been really important into shaping the way that Toronto has built out in its form. Toronto in itself has many different infrastructure projects, one of which is this, the One Zone project, which we're not going to dive too much into, but know that there has been many attempts to create Wi-Fi, readily available Wi-Fi across the city. And so this attempt was done through Toronto Hydro, which had then been passed off to a cable telecom company called Cogeco. But the interesting with this particular network is that this is a mesh network, mind you, a dormant mesh network, where there are access points that are running on the BG channels, but also a backhaul channel of the A channel in which these nodes communicated with. And this tied into Toronto Hydro's infrastructure in that the light poles were electrified, and also a fiber line that strings across the downtown core was utilized in order to provide these access points across the city, or at least within the downtown region. So this is one of our remaining kind of evidences of networks in Toronto. And the interesting thing with this particular node is that there were three models, and this is sort of a barrel configuration that was built in partnership with Siemens in Ottawa. So we're not going to be talking about this, though there are some really interesting implications of this network becoming live once again, but there is a whole kind of dormant kind of legislative municipal kind of backstory which needs to be fostered out in order for this to actually be realized again today. What we're also not going to be talking about is this, which is a node, or rather access point for our TTC, our transit system, which has recently become Wi-Fi ready after a long-winded battle. But know that there are these kind of free Wi-Fi hotspot infrastructure being placed across the city through these major networks of municipal transportation and of larger citywide projects. What we're mainly interested in is this narrative that was started by Cory Doctorow, written sometime in 1995, where this particular book describes a scenario where two of the main characters creates a Wi-Fi mesh network in a really specific particular part of Toronto called Kensington Market. Part of the narrative is that the character goes around scavenging for software, hardware, and creates a mesh network using these pieces of found hardware, and also with a backbone link to one of our IXPs, 151 Front Street. So this was the basis or narrative that has played out again with a project called Wireless Nomad, again in 2006, where a mesh network was created in Kensington Market as a parallel to this this book, where readily available Wi-Fi internet access was provided by an individual or a group of individuals. The project has since been sold off to a larger ISP, but the interesting aspect of this is that there has been this kind of aspiration and this kind of manifestation of a network, specifically a mesh network in Toronto, that has yet to be fully realized again to this day. In addition to that narrative of the mesh network in Kensington Market, there were also larger scaled nationwide networks such as Teledon. Teledon could be drawn as a parallel to something like Minitel in Paris, I mean here in France, where it's a one-way network where content is delivered to television nodes, and there's an interface for these terminals that are connected via telephone network. The aspiration for Teledon was to provide multimedia content to these television terminals. There was an input device to navigate through these content carousels. And part of it was to provide information like tourism information or weather or places to shop when you come into the city. This particular photo was taken in Toronto, where nodes were installed in different kind of landmark tourist areas, and one could navigate a kind of rudimentary navigation structure in order to find information relevant to what they're looking for. As a kind of byproduct of this network, this created a specific kind of language in which shapes and artifacts or graphic artifacts can be drawn with relative ease compared to the character-based Minitel teletext implementation. And Canadian artists have made use of this in creating some of the pre-internet web net art that we have been kind of knowing or been observing for the past couple of years with the conception of the internet. But through Teledon and through the creation of this kind of graphics language, Canadian artists were creating unique content on the web. And so this YouTube video is kind of a reflection of that, of various artists who were operating, mainly in Toronto, creating these really interesting early net art pieces. It's also worth noting that the organization that has spawned this is still in existence, called InterAxis. And a lot of the artifacts that came out of this period have been preserved in various institutions in Toronto. One of the other things that we did in a previous year of this talk was visit the York University Computer History Museum. The museum is a beautiful place. I'm not going to get too much into it, but given this kind of front facade, you can see that there are a lot of artifacts, one of which is the IP Sharp terminal, which is, again, early time-sharing network in Toronto. But our main focus was to do with the NABU network, which was an ongoing, or which is an ongoing preservation activity project at the museum. And so our guide, Ziggy, has really diligently showed us this amazing network which delivered content through, again, these terminals. But the important part of it is that this is all Canadian content and it is all trying to be preserved through this kind of emulated environment at York University. So here, when we visited the museum, where we're looking at these different network services, and he guided us through this whole experience of navigating this early internet that was created in Canada. In this case, or in this photo, we see that this is like a navigation structure for navigating news, but there was also content related to finding things like the latest showtimes for movies, looking up the alcohol, if you need alcohol, and then other really kind of niche parts of it is to do with these kind of intermediate moments where between loading of content, we get these pop-up ads or something that is analogous to pop-up ads. In this case, a 50% off logo manual, so you can learn logo potentially along the way. NABU ultimately didn't carry on and has been succeeded by internet, but there have been plenty of stories around this network in that there was a lot of aspiration for delivering really specific content and unique experiences through licensing of games from places like Atari. Unfortunately, this didn't quite follow through, but some of the earlier or some of their attempts to kind of realize this network has been kind of a predecessor for a lot of the things that we're going to be talking about with Toronto Mesh and of networks in Canada and North America. So here is a diagram of the general kind of schematic of what is happening. So there is a centralized data center in which data gets fed into the coaxial cable that gets transmitted to the home. The home makes use of these terminals, which decode. So the bottom part of the monitor is the NABU terminal, which decodes that data and presents it into this navigatable form. Interesting part of this network as well is that they made an attempt to broadcast the NABU network across quite a number of kilometers to Calgary, and I believe this was one of the first early attempts at using satellite in order to transmit information across vast distances. And then that brings us to a more recent project. Something that we've kind of reflected as extension of Toronto Mesh, Wireless Toronto. And in 2005, similar to the parallels of Cory Doctorow's book, a group of individuals decided to basically turn these Linksys WRT54GL routers into access Wi-Fi hotspots with monitoring so that local businesses and BIAs are able to create free and open Wi-Fi for people to use. The project itself has been relatively dormant. Some of the nodes are still in existence. They're still broadcasting their SSIDs. And it was pointing to us this particular article, which kind of embodies some of the thinking behind why this project came to be and what the aspirations are. Just to quickly go over this. It's not just about providing free Wi-Fi, it's about people getting people out of their houses and offices into the street. And it's about having community-run infrastructure and not rely on big telcos for access. It allows and encourages location-based content via portal pages at each hotspot. The internet is no longer just a thing you connect to. It becomes slightly different at different places. It becomes a part of your surroundings. And then by extension, they made a call for more artists, curators, community groups to experiment with technologies and for low-cost options for sharing knowledge and augment cultural opportunity into this kind of space of Wi-Fi. This is an artifact displaying all the nodes that were deployed. These nodes were owned and operated by communities and businesses in Toronto. Some of them are still in existence, like this one, which has been strapped to a building in Toronto and continues to broadcast. But this particular scenario in which you're able to still see that the hotspot is not always the case. And unfortunately, you're not able to connect to this particular one because of an issue with a DHCP server. But there are cases where Wireless Toronto hotspots are still in existence and are still broadcasting. And Udit will be coming up to talk about our current media landscape.
Hello. Hey. So Gary has kind of set up the talk with talking about the rich history of DIY networks in Toronto. I just want to fast forward to the present, and for the benefit of our European friends here, I just want to talk about the state of internet in Canada today. So the Berkman Center for Internet and Society has said that Canadian internet is one of the slowest and most expensive internet in the developing world. And the two reasons that are given for this are an over-reliance on competition. Over-reliance on competition is the main reason that's given for this. And you can see here that in this chart, that's the total telecommunications revenue by ownership. Most of it is concentrated within the five largest telecommunications service providers in Canada. And as a response, the CRTC, which is the equivalent body to the FCC in the US, has said access to broadband internet service is vital and a basic necessity for Canadians. And one of the things that they've done is instituted open access to hard to reproduce infrastructure in Canada. Although this has been really challenging because of the regulatory the confidence that they've given, because they've said that this access might be curtailed in the future. So because of a lack of competition coming from smaller groups, this hasn't really translated into more ISPs coming about. Also, net neutrality in the US has been a kind of filtering, has been affecting internet access in Canada. Based on all of these things, a bunch of people in Toronto gathered at Civic Tech Toronto, which is a place in Toronto where people get together to talk about the civic and technology. And this group of decentralized people have been called Toronto Mesh. And some people have called Toronto Mesh a soccer club for the internet because it is decentralized. A lot of these people gathered for various reasons that weren't necessarily related to each other. For example, I came to Toronto Mesh because I was interested in low power sensor networks. There are other people who came into Toronto Mesh because they were interested in access to the World Wide Web. This is sort of the vision for Toronto Mesh, increasing open, lower cost access to the World Wide Web, building a resilient and redundant network, providing agency to make important decisions about privacy, improving autonomy to access information in a free manner, and create an opportunity to develop technical literacies. One of the things that we've been trying to do is cultivate a spirit of sharing and trying to build a sustainable community. We've been running these workshops. This is actually based on a toolkit that Commotion Wireless produced. During this workshop, we built these hypothetical networks in the city, and therefore kind of spread information about the way these networks might be set up and how we can share this information on. This is another picture from the commercial wireless workshop that we ran. Another thing we did was we built this game, which we set up at the Maker Festival in Toronto. And the theme of the game was that the internet was shut down in the city. And we got kids and families to set up their own networks within the city. And therefore created this conversation around DIY networks in the city. We've been publishing a lot of our results and technologies online. So this is a picture of an antenna test that we ran last year. We've also been using decentralized systems for sharing our information. So this is a picture of the Riot client that we use on the Matrix federated chat system. We have other mesh networks that are part of this system as well. So the Philly mesh and NYC mesh are part of this network. I'm going to get Ben to talk about some of the technology.
Hello. Some of the things that you talked about became our guiding principles in how we choose technologies to use. We want to build stuff that is accessible and reproducible. Something like Raspberry Pi hardware is something that people from anywhere can easily get access to. And the software, if it runs on one, it'll run on another. We want our work to be not just the stuff we produce is not just local, it can be taken somewhere else and used. And we're not focusing only on decentralized infrastructure, but also applications. So we do a lot of integration with stuff like IPFS and SSB, which try to like bring the content into the mesh network itself. And when we deploy technologies or when we build technologies, we always think about how to document things well and have active support channels where it's more real time. People can like hop onto our chat and immediately or like within the hour get some kind of answer. We maintain three software projects. The prototype repository is mostly for tinkering. Basically, you need to flash an image onto like Raspbian or Debian onto an SD card, and you run this installation script. It will install the mesh routing software, and it also has scripts to install something like IPFS, so it's easy for you to tinker and mess with. The plan for something that's more production ready is a minimal OS image that you can that you can run on these single board computers, and we named it Mesh Orange. This is still a work in progress. Lastly, we're building a suite of monitoring software that includes this web UI that you see. We're hoping to not only show the physical locations of nodes, but also some information, real-time information about the nodes. Each node would be doing metric reporting, and we want anyone to be able to run collection software on that data. In terms of hardware, because we're doing end-to-end encryption on all the traffic, we are running them not on traditional router hardware. We're running on single board computers, which are more powerful. So the Raspberry Pi and the Orange Pi Zero are the two that we currently support. In terms of radios, there's the TP-Link that has the Atheros driver, and this USB dongle that we found that we ordered from the manufacturer in China, and that's it's a $6 American MediaTek dongle. These two, we find that over long distances, they are just not great. But in workshop situations, or like if you want to try things out in your apartment, you can use these to run mesh nodes and build a mesh that's pretty autonomous. For longer distance links, we're only starting now to experiment with Ubiquiti and Microtik stuff. In general, we're running CJDNS, over a 802.11s mesh point or ad hoc link, or it can be a ubiquity link, it can be a microtik link. It doesn't really matter what that is, because for now we're not building our own hardware or antennas. We're relying on CJ DNS to do all the encryption and then just treat that radio as some kind of transport. If you're not familiar with CJ DNS, it's an encrypted mesh software that takes the encryption the encryption key and hash that into IPv6 address, so every node gets their unique address. It's a self-addressing protocol, and your IP address is in this FC00 IPv6 space. You can do peering you can do peers over the internet with UDP peering, or you can peer over Ethernet frames. That allows us to run 1.1s or ad hoc links. CJDNS also supports a IP tunnel feature, which is like a VPN. You're using the mesh as the carrier for your VPN tunnel, and you can set your own exit gateway that's also running the CJDNS IP tunnel as a server. On a reliable transport, such as an Ethernet cable, we can pull 80 megabit per second on our Raspberry Pi 3. All encrypted traffic, but if we have a lossy wireless link, that drops to like 10 or less. Current status, almost all our nodes are running the prototype software, and there are about 20 nodes in Toronto Mesh, but of all Hyperborea, which is all the CJDNS nodes worldwide, there are more than 4,000 nodes. The plan for Toronto is to create a sizable community that are able to manage their nodes. Meanwhile, we can build that knowledge base about hardware, antennas, and so on. And also, we can polish the monitoring suite that we're building. And in December this month, we set up the first physical link over 300 meters from two balconies. And it's a ubiquity light beam. The plans for 2018, we are starting to work with the local libraries, and we are launching a workshop series in April. We feel that libraries are most knowledgeable about the local demographic, and like through them we can do the right kind of workshop for that community. More nodes on the map, get the monitoring stuff working properly, and we're planning a state of our networks conference, which we did last year, but we're trying to do a bigger event this year. This is the link to the conference in July. I want to share some of the observations we had starting this Toronto Mesh group in 2015. Most people, some of the first questions is like, do you have a physical network? The answer is not really, and still not really. I find that hard to answer. The other challenge we had was people coming to the website, they find it very difficult to navigate all the materials that we're publishing, because like some of them is on GitHub, some of them is somewhere else. We were always struggling to like, hey, what's the best way to onboard someone? We're always trying to be more inclusive. In the beginning, very early on, we established a code of conduct. Doing the workshops through the libraries is another initiative to kind of get more diverse people in, not just people who are interested in tech or experienced in tech. We are also looking to hold meetups not at the same place every time, but reach more diverse neighborhoods. The Matrix channel with an IRC bridge worked really well for us. Initially, a lot of stuff happened on IRC, and it's getting on that is a challenge for a lot of people. And since we started the Matrix channel, we bridged with many other mesh locals in North America. And there's a lot more information sharing going on. I would also want to take this opportunity to introduce or show that there are many mesh networks in North America at various stages of maturity. And some of them we work more closely with, and there's Pseudomesh, who is a group in Oakland. They develop the software and the technology for the People's Open Network. And they're also doing a build your own internet workshop series. And I know they have they have like days where it's like open house. People come in and then they show them how to like make Ethernet cables and stuff like that. They are working with Secure Scuttlebutt to build a disaster radio over 900 megahertz. Philadelphia Mesh, they host one of the headquarters. They host a headquarters of one of the largest national ISPs. A lot of residents work for it, which means there's a lot of people with that skill, but then they may also not be so interested in having a community network. So it goes both ways. Right now, they're targeting the technical hobbyists, and they hope to build a security and privacy-focused network. Some of the challenges they had, they find it difficult to get people interested constantly, and it's hard to find the right hardware for what they want to do. And that concludes our presentation. And some we have more Toronto Mesh people here actually. There's Sarah and Don and Hamish, who's not in Toronto, but he works on the Mesh Orange image. And Aaron is not here, but he's also with Toronto Mesh. Thanks. Is there a question session? Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm interested in the actual mesh routing you use. I use 802.11s,
right.
And use CGDNS over it.
Right.
But you use the 802.11s as for the mesh layer. I mean, it does the meshing really, and CGDNS just more or less happens to run on it. Well, because the thing is, as far as I know, 802.11s supports up to, I think, 31, 32 nodes where you can mesh, and that's the limit. And my question was, if you use CGDNS and have the meshing disabled and use CGDNS for meshing on the Wi-Fi links, or is it in some other way?
So I'm not sure what the limit is with 11s, but I know there is a small limit. We actually use mesh point with meshing disabled. We're using it as an ad hoc link. So kind of like the other way of what you're saying. We're not using 802.11s meshing.
That's what I wanted to know.
Right. But we're also looking into a hybrid. Like maybe in a small domain, we can enable routing. So because CJDNS is not, the routing in CJDNS is terrible.
I know.
Yes, it does least hop. It doesn't. If I have a really weak signal far away, or a really good two hop, it will take the really bad path because it's one hop away.
CGDNS, you have to, I don't know, you have to enable peering. You have to peer manually.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No. Okay. Yeah. With CGDNS, you have to peer manually, and I think it does automatic peering on local networks. So that would be something I would be interested in to know, but I can come afterwards. So.
So on Ethernet, it actually does peer automatically and it beacons. On the UDP interface, it doesn't, but there's no reason why it can't be implemented.
Okay,
Thank you very much for presenting Toronto Mesh. Tonight at 10 p.m. we have our drink up at our meetup Domo right there, and I'm happy if you come and join us and get do some networking with other network communities.